This is The Exchange on KUCB. I'm Lauren Rosenthal. Today, the legislative redistricting plan that was used for the 2012 elections shook up Alaskan politics. It put 59 of 60 seats up for re-election, and the Supreme Court recently ruled that it can't be used again. Representative Bob Heron served two terms representing Bethel and many rural villages along the Kuskokwim River. He's back to being a freshman all over again this year as he begins legislating on behalf of his new district, which includes Bethel, the Aleutians, and the Pribilofs. Representative Bob Heron joins me today via telephone to talk about his legislative priorities for our region and to answer your questions. Thanks for joining me, Representative Heron.
Well, it's good to listen and to hear your voice, Lauren. I appreciate this opportunity.
Thanks. Now, before we get started here, Representative Heron, let me remind our listeners they can call in with questions or comments. Now, we aren't able to take your calls on the air today, but Stephanie is answering the phone, and she'll make sure that your messages get to me here in the studio. So, folks, if you have any thoughts, comments, or questions for your representative, please give us a call at 581-2161 or send an email to news@kucb.org. So just to start, Representative Heron, can you tell me how you've gone about familiarizing yourself with the communities in your new district?
Well, several approaches, of course, is was able to travel out there at the end of August and then the middle of September to Unalaska, and then communications by both email and by mail correspondence, tried to share my life experiences are. And then once we got down to Juneau, we, of course, started with our weekly newsletter. And then I've asked Duan to set up individual phone conversations, and we call individuals throughout the region to introduce myself and ask them what is their concerns, whether it's concerns that they have for their community or their community's concerns or the region's concerns. So I've tried to reach out as much as possible to engage in a part of Alaska that is new to me, of course, like you said, but is an important and exciting part of all of Alaska.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, Bryce Edgman of Dillingham used to represent the Aleutians in the House, and he's representing now a lot of the communities that you used to, some rural villages along the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. So you've sort of traded territories. Can you tell me specifically how you are working together to represent the about 60 communities you have between you?
Well, in the wisdom of the redistricting board is they felt that they had to do this. Personally, it doesn't make much sense at first blush, because under the Constitution, districts should be compact, contiguous, and socially connected economically as well. And so the way it was before for both Bryce and I is the Dillingham is a natural part of the peninsula, and then, of course, the chain, and then above Dillingham, the Bristol Bay Area. So that made real good reason for why that worked. Over on the Kuskokwim side, my district was relatively small in comparison to other rural districts. And so Bethel was the hub, and then 27 villages directly connected to Bethel, historically, financially. One school district represented nearly all of them. And so it was really a lower Kuskokwim school, a lower Kuskokwim house district.
Sure.
And now Bethel is literally an island. I represent a village outside of Dillingham, Clark's Point. Now Bryce represents a village that's within 3 miles of Bethel.
Wow.
Of Oscarville. And
yeah.
So why they did it? Well, there's lots of theories, but in
sure.
part I think it was mostly to disrupt the bipartisan coalition in the Senate, where, of course, both of our regions enjoyed the co-chairmanship of Lyman Hoffman in Senate Finance.
Sure.
And
there, so,
you know,
to say the least,
there's a lot of benefits to that.
Yeah, and I hate to cut you off. So you sit on the Fisheries Committee now, and you've been a defender of subsistence salmon runs on the Yukon-Kuskokwim River. It's obviously really important to that region. But with that, you've been a critic, you know, of the Pollock fleet at times. In 2009, you supported a hard cap on Chinook bycatch. And so I just wanted to ask, now, how are you balancing the needs of subsistence fishermen in that region with the well-being of the Pollock fleet, which drives Unalaska's tax base?
Well, the thing about it is, you've asked me this before, is yes, I did ask hard questions, and I did represent the people that I did in 2009, because my constituents clearly stated to me that it was important to them. Now that I have essentially a district that represents people that are dependent on salmon and pollock, because a lot of the communities in my former district are part of a Coastal Villages Region Fund. So it really was worth trying to find that balance. Now I still continue to have the Bethel community, some small villages down the coast south of Bethel, and now part of some of the western Bristol Bay villages, and, of course, the peninsula and chain, is that we have to protect all those fisheries, and we have to find a balance for all the constituency. Is it going to be an easy test, easy quest, an easy question to find the answer? No, it's not. But I'm willing to work with all the stakeholders on trying to get the best for all the types of fisheries that we have in a 1,700-mile-long district.
Sure. And we've just gotten a question from a listener, the students of a local teacher, Jonathan Crouch. They want to know, if you support oil drilling exploration in Alaska despite risks to the environment, and if so, why?
Well, I think that, you know, obviously oil is the product that drives a lot of the things that we enjoy, and of course most of Alaska is dependent on diesel generations for electricity. So there has to be a careful and very cautious development of oil resources, both on land and offshore. And so we have to decide where's the risk and where's the benefit. But clearly, until the world runs out of oil, which will be a long time from now, how can we find alternative energies that are actually affordable? Small alternative energies will work on a small scale, but can they work on a large scale?
Mm-hmm. And so what's your take on alternative energy projects, you know, in the Aleutians? That's something that a lot of communities have been working toward. What will you do to support that?
Well, I'll work to what makes sense is that whether it's wind, geothermal, tidal, even LNG, these are things that we have to explore, because you have to, as humans do, they have to find tools that protect themselves, their family, and their communities. And so I'll be working very closely with all communities in all parts of the region that want to find ways to have affordable alternative energy, as well as what you would call traditional energy sources.
Great. And, you know, speaking of education, this legislative district now really runs the gamut. Unalaska has two schools. They're both high achieving and with high enrollment relative to other communities in the region, some of which are just struggling to keep 10 students enrolled and the doors open to their school. Do you have any specific plans to improve rural education?
Well, I think that education is constantly striving to improve itself. The battle this year down in the legislative session is going to be about funding. It's the governor has proposed his budget of flat funding, except for about a $25 million side increase that would be for the additional cost of energy. But it's remarkable and sort of a head scratcher at the same time is the governor, during a State of the State, says, I want to raise the graduation rates by 2020 to 90%. But in the same breath, oh, by the way, I think that school districts can do with what they have now, and I'm not going to advocate for an increase in the base student allocation. So you say to yourself, say what? I mean, how can you just keep up with inflation? Is if you don't keep up with inflation, school boards and administrations have to decide how they can keep that quality teacher in the room, but find a support personnel that can absorb those cuts. So I'm perplexed, and I know myself and many other people are going to work to increase the base student allocation to the school districts around the state.
Sure. And I wanted to know, what do you think of some proposals now to tie teachers' performance evaluations to student test scores? I've had some questions about how that might work in some rural districts. How do you feel about that?
Well, we have to have the dialogue. We have to understand what is going to be the expectations, but more importantly, is how do we get to those outcomes without unfairly chasing after one person when it takes you know, the old adage is it takes a village to teach a child to become an adult. And so, I don't know, can we find a place where it works for the teacher, but it also works in fairness to the whole education system?
Mm-hmm. And we have another question from these local students. They want to know, how can the state take a proactive approach toward bringing fiber optic cable to Unalaska Dutch Harbor? And by that, I think they mean high-speed internet.
Well, unfortunately, there are private sector entities out there that are trying to do that, one coming down the peninsula and out to the chain. But now there's a new one that's it's an Arctic Fiber is being proposed. Apparently, they have the money. It's going to go from Tokyo to London through the Northwest Passage with five takeoff places where there could be a fiber to parts of Alaska, and those are Barrow, Wainwright, Kotzebue, and Nome, and a place that's far out the chain, but the fiber cable is going to go pass through the chain near Shimia, and they plan to have a takeoff point there. So finding a way to find private sector dollars where they can take advantage of that fiber that's going right by Alaska is something that a lot of people are looking at right now.
Mm-hmm. And so kind of along with that, I mean, what's the state's role in encouraging, you know, projects like that? You know, telecommunications and infrastructure are still huge challenges for this region. Just kind of curious what you think you can do.
Well, I think that the state can be a partner in it. Is, you know, all of the challenges have to build energy needs, for example, all the infrastructure throughout that we need. Now, how can the governor and the legislature partner with private sector to create opportunities, tax credits, maybe even some money? How we can get that to come off of, for example, that one or any other project that would bring broadband to our rural areas is something that the state is active in, but it's going to take significant private sector dollars to do that.
Sure. And, you know, we are running low on time, so I think I have one last question for you. You sort of walked an interesting line when it comes to Governor Parnell's plans to cut oil taxes for the past 4 years. You said you agree that we should do that. But now that his proposals come out with $1 billion in tax credits, it seems like that's a bit too far for you. Can you tell me really quickly, you know, what the appropriate balance is?
Well, that's the $64,000 question. Both of the people that support his intent, I didn't support his intent, I just don't support how far he's going to go, is we're going to reduce the taxes. That means less revenue for the state, less revenue for the people that own the oil. That's you and I and everyone else. But at the same time, right now we're giving out these huge credits. So, for example, an oil company could spend $1 billion in investment on the North Slope to put more oil in the pipeline, but then we turn around and we give them $750 million in credit, and so to encourage that, so they only put up $250 million of their own, and so we become an owner in that investment, But at the same time, the governor wants to reduce the amount of revenue we get. A lot of people are questioning it, both the Republicans in both houses, the Senate and the House, is how far do we turn the turn the knob? And I recognize is this, if we don't get more investment, that means we don't get oil in the pipeline. But we can't turn it down too quickly, because then the engine will cough and sputter and maybe die. So it's a real balancing act, and I recognize that we have to reduce it, but we can't do it suddenly, and we have to do it gradually, and how far do we go?
Sure.
Nobody has the answer down here yet, because it's going to take a vigorous debate and convincing people that are both totally against it, totally for it, and all the others that are in between. So those conversations are going to happen until the end of session.
It's going to be interesting to see how they play out. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have, Representative Herron. But if people are interested in talking with you further, I understand you'll be in town coming up really shortly. When will you be here?
Arrive Friday, be there, and then Duane is coming out with me, and I'm bringing my wife as well. So we'll be there Friday and Saturday, and then we'll catch the noon flight back to Juneau on Sunday.
Perfect. Well, yeah, there's more information on that on our website if you're interested in meeting with Representative Herron in person. Thank you so much for joining me, Representative Herron.
Lauren, it's been great, and thanks for the questions from the students.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.